Hello and welcome to the Portfolio Intelligence Podcast. I'm your host, John Bryson, Head of Investment Consulting at John Hancock Investment Management. The goal of this podcast is to help investment professionals deliver better outcomes for their clients and their practice. Topics we'll address include advisor business building ideas, capital market updates, the latest trends in portfolio construction, and investment insights from veteran portfolio managers across our global network. I'm joined today by Emily Rowland and Matt Miskin, co-chief investment strategists at John Hancock Investment Management. Emily and Matt, you and your team are the architects behind the quarterly capital markets outlook piece we call Market Intelligence, and we had a great plan going into our first podcast, and then Corona hit, coronavirus. Emily, what do we do with this right now?
Thanks, John. Yeah, it's certainly been a challenging week. In fact, the worst week we've had in markets since 2008. Global equity markets are down anywhere between 10 and 15%. And we're really not seeing any kind of winners or losers actually stick out to us. We've got U.S. equities, non-U.S. emerging markets, all down, all 11 sectors of the S&P 500 now in negative territory, and really seeing sort of indiscriminate selling from investors across the board as the fears of this virus spreading, not only physically, but also the economic impact of this virus, causing investors really to be capitulating here. Bonds are holding up well, which makes a lot of sense in this environment. We've seen the 10-year Treasury break down all the way through historic lows, below 125 at this point. And that has reinverted the yield curve. The yield curve, portions of it are once again inverted, which means the bond market is basically screaming at the Fed that they need to do something here in terms of monetary or potentially even fiscal stimulus. When we look across the board, we always focus on the macro data. And we're looking at some of the more timely indicators that we're seeing in the markets right now. And while the bond market is basically telling you that we're in a recession or about to be in a recession, the macro data right now really isn't confirming that narrative. We look at things like business surveys, PMI data. That's actually come in a lot, not great, but less worse than a lot of folks have expected. Things like consumer confidence fell just slightly here in the U.S., but still up. And also initial jobless claims coming in fairly decent, rising a little bit this week, but still okay. So the real-time data right now is kind of mixed rather than falling meaningfully, as the bond market again would be suggesting. The final thing I would point out is kind of where we started. Believe it or not, you know, the all-time high in the S&P 500 was you know, just over a week ago. So this correction has happened very, very quickly. And it comes at a time where valuations within stocks had gotten quite rich. And, you know, we had an over 30% return last year. And then we came into the year with an environment in which there had been a ton of multiple expansion based on a lot of liquidity provided by central bankers globally, which had lifted markets meaningfully, but the economic backdrop had failed to really meaningfully reaccelerate yet. It was just starting to do so. We were becoming more open to this idea of economic growth reaccelerating, but at this point, we're really kind of hitting the pause button on this as these virus fears play out.
So if it's hitting the pause button, do you have concerns that if we have a week, if the bleeding this week continues into next week, it's really going to impact global growth? And what about like the supply shock impact of this? Are you worried about that? And what are you hearing from the network?
Sure. The thing that's really most interesting and different about than previous examples of epidemics that have infected or impacted markets is just the size of China's economy. So when we had SARS in 2003, which is one of the key examples that everybody's talking about, the Chinese economy was about $2 trillion. It's a $14 trillion economy today, which means it's far more connected to global supply chains. It certainly remains the driver of global economic growth. And for that reason, we're seeing a bigger impact to the global economy, and it's not just contained to China and Europe, which tends to be more connected as well. So really, we're seeing this impact economic activity, but we're not yet seeing that follow through to the actual hard data, which we'll be looking for in the next few weeks.
Okay. So Matt, you've been out on the road this week talking to financial advisors. What are you telling them to do with this information? How should they be thinking about positioning portfolios?
Yeah, the first thing we're looking at is the fixed income part of the market, and really fixed income portfolios that we've been analyzing and looking at have tended to have a bit of a credit bias, meaning high yields a portion of those fixed income portfolios, and also a lower duration bias. So not as much duration as the aggregate benchmark. And actually, we've been kind of advocating the opposite of those two directions. So we really like higher quality bonds versus lower quality bonds. So think investment grade corporate bonds, mortgage-backed securities, even treasuries. These are things in the core part of the bond market that tend to have a negative correlation to the S&P and broader equity markets. Now they're paying off. So, you know, I know investors and clients have hated bonds for a long time. Why do I have bonds in my portfolio? Well, now they're starting to really shine, and that's why we own them. And then you also need that duration component too. Being in the short end in high quality bonds, it's not going to kill you. Cash isn't going to hurt you here. But if you're in the intermediate part of the curve, that is more of a ballast than being on the short end. So really, it's about increasing your credit quality and moving out on the curve to the intermediate part of the curve. I know yields have dropped a lot, and it's hard to look at that and kind of allocate back in the intermediate part of the curve. But you can't, you know, if you want to limit your equity risk, you got to think about duration as that antidote to that. And that's really what we've been talking about. Equities, yeah, there's little things you can do on the margin here. We're actually looking at it more opportunistically. As Emily highlighted, the baby's being thrown out with the bathwater. Everything's getting sold. That's when you can find relative opportunities. And fundamental approach, looking for better businesses with higher ROE, better margins, lower debt to equity. These are the kind of stocks, primarily in the U.S., that we'd be looking to actually allocate to. We're not calling a bottom. There's no sense of even trying. But you've gotten a big discount in the last week, about a 15% discount in some pretty good businesses out there. We try to look at that opportunistically, try to nibble on that within an equity portfolio, but it's about starting with fixed income, getting that right in a broader multi-asset portfolio context.
I've been hearing a lot this week about program trading and just the market in general selling off and you know futures selling off. Are you finding that quality companies are getting sucked up in that vacuum?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, program trading or algorithmic trading, it's basically, you know, sell first and ask questions later. And they're using headlines. They're using headlines to trade off of, which may or may not be right. They may or may not be really what's going to happen in a week from now, a month from now, a quarter from now. So it's about being disciplined. It's about looking at the fundamentals. We think some businesses are going to be better off and better able to wade through a weaker global growth environment than others. You know, some of the tech stocks that are starting to get hit here that are, you know, still got a lot of cash on their balance sheets, still likely to generate some revenue or earnings growth this year, maybe not a lot, but even some, versus others that are more levered, more tied to kind of systematic risk. So we're tilting into consumer staples, technology, healthcare, those type of businesses. But then the heavy cyclical sectors, think industrials, materials, energy, we wouldn't be as favorable on those. So there's opportunities today, and those algorithmic traders might be actually giving you an opportunity, and we take advantage of that.
All right. So, Emily, if there's opportunities today, as Matt's alluding to, where do we go from here? What do we look for in the marketplace and in the economy to give us hope and guidance?
Yeah, there's really three things we would be looking at today to kind of gauge, you know, how much worse things can get and where those opportunities may come from. And the first is, it's really about the Fed, and this market's been about the Fed a lot over the last couple of years, and we talked about this liquidity that driven environment with three rate cuts and balance sheet expansion last year as being responsible for some of the great returns that investors earned in markets. And we also talked about the fact that you know, because there's portions of the yield curve that are once again inverted, that the bond market is telling the Fed to cut. So the next Fed meeting that we have is March 18th. We're going to be watching very closely for signs of what the Fed does here. Their goal heading into 2020, frankly, was that they wanted to stay on the sidelines. That may or may not be because it's an election year, but they felt like they did a lot in 2019 to appease markets, and they'd really rather not lower rates again. The bond market is telling them to. Fed funds futures are telling them that the bond market's pricing this in. So it'll be interesting to us to see if the Fed kind of provides that boost that markets are looking for. Certainly, policymakers in China have been doing an awful lot in order to reaccelerate or kind of stave off the challenges there. The other thing that we would be watching is just earnings revisions. So heading into 2020, we were looking at an environment in which analysts expected about 9.5% earnings growth for the S&P 500. And that was a key reason that we've been leaning into U.S. equities, is that kind of check mark we had given to the earnings environment. Now, right now, you look at kind of where things stand for 2020, and those earnings expectations have come down a bit, 1 or 2%. And we're seeing 1% shaved off of Q1 earnings growth, which was already, the bar was quite low at about 3.5%. That's come down. And we're also seeing a little bit being shaved off 2020 earnings estimates. But we'll be watching that piece very, very closely to see kind of how much this impact is going to impact corporate fundamentals. And then the final thing we would be looking at is the economic data, and specifically the survey data. We have really been, relying an awful lot on things like PMI data. We like it because it's a monthly survey, very timely indicator of purchasing managers at manufacturing firms around the world. It gives you a sense of how business conditions look. Some of the early indications that we've seen in terms of PMI are unsurprisingly a little bit of a retraction, but not maybe quite as much as we had expected. So over the next couple of weeks, we'll be receiving more data, and we can really start to gauge kind of how impactful this is going to be in terms of global growth.
What about investor sentiment? I know if we look at the U.S. Consumer, it's going to have a big impact on how we do going forward. Any thoughts on investor sentiment and how that's changing this week?
Sure. I mean, one thing that I would say regarding the consumer first is that the consumer certainly has been the ballast of the U.S. economy and really the workhorse of an economy that's been shaky in other ways. And as long as the jobs market holds up, as long as consumer spending holds up in the U.S., that's incredibly important in terms of the health of the economy. And all signs are that that is remaining intact. The other kind of side of sentiment to think about, in our view, is really around flows. And if you look at what happened last year, you know, investors just piled into fixed income funds and really eschewed equity funds, even though we were, right in the middle of one of the best markets for investors from an equity market perspective. So a lot of this depends on when investors kind of start to think about opportunities to buy the dip, and we'll be looking at that fund flow data for clues that this capitulation might, you know, start to come to an end over the next couple of weeks.
All right. And Matt, it's really hard in a week where the markets are falling 3 or 4% a day to kind of have a long-term view and have a level-headed approach to it. What are you telling advisors? How are your conversations going with them about kind of setting expectations with their clients?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is that the financial advisor role right now is paramount. And you could just tell that, you know, so many clients and investors are really relying on their advisor. And it's a challenging time to obviously be an advisor and have that responsibility. I mean, we put out all this content, whether it's market intelligence, whether it's the blogs on our website, whether it's trying to do this podcast. We're trying to support you in any way we can. But it is certainly a challenging time. I mean, our family members are calling us as strategists, asking us, what do we do? What do we do? And, it's kind of saying, hey, you should have a financial advisor that, you know, puts you back on your plan and make sure your time horizon, your risk tolerance, all these things are in place, and not to overreact to these type of things. And that's really what we're advocating for as well. But it is certainly a time for financial advisors to shine, and that's what we're seeing in our day-to-day conversations.
Great. Well, I love hearing your quarterly commentary every couple of months, and I'm looking forward to the next one. You know, there's a lot going on in the marketplace. We always want to be available. If you're interested in hearing more, I would say to dial into the John Hancock Investments website. If you like this podcast, please subscribe. All of our information is available on jhinvestments.com. We've got information on macro trends, portfolio construction, business building ideas, and much, much more. Thanks so much for listening to the show. This podcast is being brought to you by John Hancock Investment Management Distributors, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker, are subject to change as market and other conditions warrant and do not constitute investment advice or a recommendation regarding any specific product or security. There is no guarantee that any investment strategy discussed will be successful or achieve any particular level of results. Any economic or market performance information is historical and is not indicative of future results, and no forecasts are guaranteed. Investing involves risks, including the potential loss of principal.